This is the Seahawkers Podcast, episode 337. I'm Brandon Schultz of the Military Seahawkers, and joining me, my good buddy and Montana Seahawker, Adam Emmert.
Yeah, Brandon. The reality is that it's the off season, and you know, that's unfortunate. But you know, the reality really is that I'm here talking to you today. And the real reality of that is that we're going to cover a lot of Russ's press conference.
Yeah.
And some people might think that's unfortunate, but, you know, it's just reality. So,
okay. This is probably the biggest news to talk about, but there's other things to talk about it too. One of the things that I took away from this week that kind of is blowing me away a little bit is that we are less than 6 weeks away from the start of training camp. Less than
Thank
six
God.
Weeks from the start of training camp. We're going to have football soon.
I know. Thank God. Because, this is the time of the year where we talk about things like what Russ had to say and Pete had to say when they said nothing like they always will and do. And so, yeah.
Well, we'll get to Russ. We'll get to Pete. Adam, I want to start with a guy that probably we don't start with enough. And that's Tyler Lockett, because there was something in particular that he said here just this week that it has me fired up, because it's something that we talked about as a big problem with the offense at the end of 2020. And he's speaking about what the offense is going to look like when it comes to 2021. And this is what I wanted to hear.
You know, it might look different because, you know, a lot of teams haven't really seen us go short. A lot of teams were trying to force us to go short, and we did, and we wanted explosives and stuff like that. But, I mean, truth be told, the explosives part of it is not going to change. It's just the fact that we're going to learn how to be a lot more balanced to where whatever teams decide to give us, that's what we're going to take. Teams decide to play us deep, then we're going to take everything short, and we're going to be able to run our offense all the way down the field and control the clock. If teams try to take the short stuff away, we're going to go deep. You know, so at the end of the day, I think we're just learning how to be able to build our offense up as a whole to where we don't have to depend on one thing, but we can be able to depend on different types of phases of our offense. So whatever people give us, we're just going to take, and we're not going to be greedy. We're not going to go out there and force things to happen. We're just going to naturally let the game come to us.
Why did it take a new offensive coordinator to figure that out? Tyler knows what's going on.
Hazan, does this mean no more kill shots on 3rd and 2 on the opponent's 45?
Maybe. You know, I heard Pete talking about improving on 3rd down and that being a really key component of how they're going to operate on offense. And yeah, there were way too. But again, you know, maybe not. Maybe that won't change, because if you're talking about what the defense is giving you, generally on 3rd and short, they're looking to take away the short ones. And so they're allowing you to go for the kill shots, even though those are more, you know, low percentage type chances of throws. So I hope that
not against us. They knew what the tendencies were.
Yeah.
And they play that, you know, 2 deep safety stuff on 3rd and 2 towards the end of the year. You know, on any of those, like they're like, yes, go ahead, check it down. Let's see if you can actually do it.
I'm waiting to see if Russell can actually check it down. Because he's called for a better tempo on offense, I feel like every offseason that he's been within the NFL. And that was another big takeaway just this past week of hearing Pete, of hearing Russ, and hearing some of the people on offense talk about tempo. Yeah, I hope that that is something with this new offense that they can finally achieve, because I feel like it's been talked about and talked about every offseason.
Yeah, it's definitely talked about during the offseason, yet somehow it doesn't come up during the season. Like, nobody seems, except for us, I feel like we're the only ones that talk about it during the season. It's like, why are we out of the huddle with 10 seconds left all the time?
Uh-huh.
Right? Or 5 seconds left. And you did see some tweets from some of the beat reporters saying that, you know, they're consistently out of the huddle with, 15, 20 seconds left on the clock. And, you know, maybe running with a little more urgency. And I think that would be great. And maybe it's a change in verbiage that just truncates everything. You know, maybe Waldy's got things dialed in, so he's 2 or 3 plays ahead of himself and, you know, what he's trying to call, and just prepared a little bit better. Maybe Russ is communicating better. I don't know. But at the end of the day, they really do need to be a lot more efficient getting in and out of the huddle and making life easy on themselves. Because if Tyler's going to sit there and talk about, oh, we're going to take whatever the defense has given us, hoodly-ha, whatever, which is all great. I hope they do that. But you need some time at the line of scrimmage as the quarterback to sit and dissect the defense with your brain for a minute before you can really know, okay, they're bringing a blitz here. I'm going to try to do this. They're in, you know, cover two, whatever it is, and then take what the defense is actually giving you.
Yeah, understanding what the defense may be checking to based on your alignment, that sort of thing. There's a lot that goes into that short amount of time. And if you're just lining up and all you're thinking about is getting the playoff before the clock hits zero, then yeah, you're losing a lot of that, those valuable seconds to compute things like that as quarterback.
Absolutely. So I think one of the big changes, and just like you said, that could make the biggest dividend or pay the biggest dividend here would be that they actually do up the tempo from the sideline, just getting in and out. That doesn't mean you're running hurry up all the time. It just means that you're getting the line of scrimmage with a little more time.
Well, Russell Wilson did address the Shane Waldron offense as well. We'll get to the other stuff, the drama stuff. Let's skip ahead to the stuff of how Russell Wilson feels about Shane Waldron, because this is going to be his, what, third offensive coordinator now in the NFL. And it's kind of given him an opportunity to learn yet another offense. But from what we hear from Russ, it may not be all that much different.
First of all, I wouldn't say it's a massive departure. I think that, you know, we have a lot of the core concepts and things that we've done over the years have been extremely, extremely successful. I think that we also have some nuances across the board that, you know, really challenge the defense. Like I said, using the whole field and really expanding the offense and just using everybody as much as possible, all different formations and different looks and different tempos and all that. I think that obviously the tempo part of it is something that's real. I think also too is just, you know, I think Shane brings a really, really cool thought process to it all. You know, and I think the best part is we get to go out and practice it and work at it and get better as much as possible. And guys are prepared. They're smarter than ever. I think we're really ready to roll. And I feel really confident about it. So I'm excited.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great Russ speak. I tell you what, Brandon, I couldn't get through it. I couldn't get through it.
Yeah.
I got about halfway through this presser and I couldn't listen to any more. And it's not that he was doing anything wrong.
Yeah.
But I started out the pod, you know, well, the reality of it is this and the reality of it is that. Good freaking God. If I heard him say the reality is one more freaking time, I was going to tear my hair out. And then when he said the real reality of the situation is this, I lost it. I was just like, I can't. So I didn't even get to this answer that he had about Waldron and all that.
No,
but the thing is that the press is going to ask you, so what's different about the offense this year? And what are they going to say other than, well, you know, stuff?
Well,
they're not going to reveal anything.
And I don't even know if there is that much to reveal, because what are you going to say? I mean, you had DK out there saying, oh, there's, you know, we're going to run routes that nobody's seen from us before. And, you know, what does that necessarily mean? So I think it is a struggle for players to come up with something to say to the answer to that question without giving anything away in terms of, you know, secrets of something you would want
to
keep from other teams, but also give the media enough to say, okay, well, things are going to be different. And also you want to say things that you don't want to necessarily crush Brian Schottenheimer and say, oh yeah, well, he's way better than Brian was. That guy was a slouch when it came to coordinating an offense, but this guy's really good.
Yeah. Yeah. Whether it's that or any other comment that they'll latch onto and just run with, right?
Yeah.
Like a lot of guys did after this presser. And just so I don't know what you're supposed to do as the athlete or the coach or the GM, whoever is in front of the microphone, especially for the press conferences this time of year. It's not like just right after a game where you can talk about some specifics about that game, right? That you're like, yes, this happened and this might be a little bit of why, without really giving away secrets or things like that. You can talk about your thinking on a call or something like that. This time of year, you're holding everything close to the vest. And especially when it comes to an offseason where there was some friction between the quarterback, the GM, and the head coach. And you know, they don't really want to talk about it. And if they are going to talk about it, they're going to paint it as if it's all peaches and cream and rainbows. They just are. And that's okay.
What do you mean? You're saying that this offseason that there was something going on between Pete and John and Russell Wilson?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they're all frustrated that they haven't won a chip since the last one.
Well, they sound all good here.
What's up?
Just letting everybody know we're still friends, you know?
Hey.
Just messing with you.
There you go. Get out of here. You had your press conference.
See? They're all chums.
Yeah, no, that was a fun moment. And I think that also speaks to where they really are now. I mean, good Lord, you'd think that the way that the media asked questions during this presser that, you know, Pete and Russ have to like show up and leave the facility at different times or they might stab each other in the neck in the parking lot or something. It's like, give me a break. They obviously have worked through whatever it is that was the problem, at least for this year. And they like, I think in Russ's head, it's like, okay, I do feel good about everybody's answers and where we're going. And Pete feels good about Russ being on the same page. Now they all got to walk the walk, and we'll see if that actually plays out throughout the year.
Well, those questions, they needed to be asked, though.
I don't think they catfishing did. I really, really, really don't. We have all been through this for months. For months. What, we're going to rehash it yet again because all of the local media is butthurt because I think Russ lied to him? I mean, good God. It's just so pathetic. These press conferences have become such a dog and pony show. They're unbelievably pointless. I don't even know why we do them anymore. That chick that walked out of the French Open, the tennis player, Osaka, I think her last name was. But good for her. Like, I just, who cares anymore?
I think with the amount of attention that this got in the offseason, that for us to wait as long as we did to hear from Russ, to actually answer questions directly. Now, we know that Russ, just the way he is in front of the camera, that he's going to get out there and he's going to say all the right things. And he's not going to make it into any bigger of a deal than it has been in the past. But I think that these questions build up. And we saw a couple of times where I think there were valid questions that the media wanted answers to that just because they'd just kind of been lingering, like the idea of Russell Wilson, whether or not he demanded a trade, did he or didn't he? And he addressed that specifically.
You know, in terms of the trade talks, I think anytime you play professional sports, there's always a possibility of something happen, right? And I think that's just the reality. I think that there's a lot of teams out there that people were saying that I was going to or would go to. I requested a trade. I did not request a trade. I've always wanted to play here. You know, and the reality is, you know, I think calls were getting thrown around and this and that. And I think that's just a reality. But I think at the end of the day, the real reality is that I'm here and I'm here to win. I'm here to win it all.
Now I'm going to be listening to him say reality as many times in these answers, just because you put that in my head.
I didn't put it in my head or your head. Russ put it in our heads. And look, okay, you said these are questions that have to be asked. Why? Is there anybody that's listening to this podcast right now that if you mocked asked them the question, right, that they couldn't give pretty much that exact answer that came out of Russ's mouth? Don't we all know pretty much exactly what he's going to say? Like, I mean, for reals.
What's the point? As close as we follow the team, but as far as people in the media, throughout the offseason, this is the thing that was news, and now, you know, it was going to happen.
It was news
at some
according
point.
To them.
It was
it was news according to them. Like, this is definitely more of a media-driven story than it is the real reality story, right? I mean, there was some friction, absolutely. When Russ voiced a little bit of that frustration on Patrick's show, do you think the Seahawks got phone calls about whether or not they would trade him there? Absolutely. Do you think Schneider called Russ and was like, yeah, I'm getting a bunch of calls. I am going to listen to them because you never know. But would there be any teams that you'd be cool with going to? And Russ was like, sure, these four teams. And whoop-de-catfish can do. But here we are, 3 months later, still rehashing this crap when we could be talking about all sorts of other stuff.
Well, we're rehashing it because Russ took this long to get out in front of a camera because these questions were going to come from them, whether he addressed it in April or May, and now it's June. And so now it's old news, but they've been hanging on to these because, like you said,
it's old drama that was stirred up by the media. So now the media has to ask about it 3 months later because they didn't get the answers to their made up story in the first.
I don't think it's made up because, again, the idea of four names coming out, that was coming directly from Russell Wilson. And he confirmed that he put out those four names as the four teams that he would consider.
There was a whole thing saying that I requested a trade. And that's just not true. You know, I didn't request a trade, you know, so I think everything kind of started from there. And then obviously tons of teams were calling. And I think that the reality was, is that I didn't really want to go anywhere else. I wanted to play in Seattle, but if I had to go somewhere, these are the teams I would go to consider. At the end of the day, I have no trade clause. Right. So I think, you know, I think for me though, you know, I had a great conversation with Coach Carroll, you know, had a good, really great conversation with John too. You know, and Coach Carroll and I spent a lot of time together, one-on-one, and, you know, we're on the same page, you know, we're here to do what we're meant to do, and that's to win it all. And, I'm excited. I'm excited about who we have, the guys we have. I'm excited where we are. Coach Carroll and I's relationship couldn't be stronger on it. You know, and like I said earlier, you know, my focus is, to win, and winning is everything to me.
Yeah. I mean, again, I could have scripted that answer for you.
Well, yeah, because we've listened to him long enough to know
and
that.
And so have these reporters.
But they can't make up his answer for him. They have to ask the question to get the response from Russ so then they can write it in the story.
All right. So have one guy ask the question about the offseason crap. Okay. And then, like, can we all move on? I think they asked him three different times about, like, hey, what do you think about throwing your offensive lineman under the bus? Yeah. Expecting a different answer at the same time. Freaking do better.
Yeah, I didn't.
It's a clown show in these freaking press conferences, man.
Of the things that were made into a lot of drama this offseason, the part about him throwing his offensive line under the bus, I think, was the most overblown out of everything because he was asked about getting hit too much in the question. And since he came into the league being the quarterback who has been hit the most, and he addressed it, yes, I can do better. And also, you know, the offensive line can do better.
And the play calls can be better.
I don't think that there's any way around answering that question without it reflecting somewhat on the offensive line. What is he supposed to say? Yeah, I've had amazing blocking every single season, but yet it's my fault that I got sacked 400 times?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And you think all those guys that play up front don't know?
Right.
I mean, they're the guys that are actually doing the job. They know what kind of job they're doing up there.
Yeah. And so I heard a lot of commentary about Russell Wilson coming out and answering these questions and flat out lying. And I don't think that anything that he said was a lie. I think that there's just the reality is that, see, he's got it in my head now, is that he does a lot of spin. Just like every team does, whether it's protecting himself, whether it's protecting the team, that's what you're going to get. But I don't think that Russell Wilson was demanding a trade. Now, maybe this is our opportunity, Adam, to spike the football a little bit, you know, standing in the south end zone where the magic happens, because I feel like the way that we covered the drama this offseason, what I heard was that a lot of stuff that maybe we were thinking was actually the way things went down. I remember you saying that, yeah, maybe at one point Russ got upset and said, well, you know, if this is the way it's going to be, then maybe you should think about trading me. And if the team called him on it and said, well, if we're going to trade you, you have a no trade clause. So where are the teams that you'd want to go to? And he's like, well, they just called me on it. I guess I have to come up with some team names.
Yeah.
And then those team names get set. And so those team names get out and he's like, well, those weren't the team names that I necessarily said. So it was weird that clarification had to come when it did, especially when we talk about the timing. Like, he was so quick to address the potential rumors that came up within the Athletic story of the different team names that were thrown out there, because that's, I think, when the agent's tweet came out with the four names was after the Athletic story, and the Dolphins were mentioned in there and another team, maybe it was the Jets. So it was weird for him to say, oh, no, no, no. My agent said that these were the four team names. So just to get that out there, we can address this quickly. But in terms of addressing any of those other questions, yeah, that can wait till just now in June.
Yeah, I guess. And I don't know. But just like you said, we've kind of covered this as it's all been going on. And you and I have had kind of the same beat on the whole thing. And I feel like the two of us, we put this to bed, what, a good month and a half ago? 2 months ago?
Yeah, I think so. It was about there.
Yeah, when it was done and over with. Like, how come we can't, you know, how come the media can't at this point, right? And then they act so butthurt that they feel like they're getting lied to and made to look like idiots because they blew this thing out of proportion. And then throw him back under the bus.
Right.
And it's like, oh, no, he's not our quarterback anymore. He's a liar. I can't stand him. We're out on Russ. Yeah, you see a couple writers do that, and you're like, what?
I didn't get that from any of the local guys necessarily. More, I felt that more from the national perspective, just because they were the ones who had blown it up to be so much bigger this offseason. I think everybody wanted Russ and the Seahawks to be more like Aaron Rodgers and the Packers.
Of course.
And it's obviously not to the level of Aaron Rodgers and the Packers, but they got their story, and it's now with Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, right. So hopefully they can all start to focus on that now. Because, yeah, that was the majority of the presser. There, you know, you heard Russ's answer about the difference in the offense. And then, you know, kind of the rest of the presser was Russ reading off names like he always does. You know, oh, well, we got DK and we got Tyler and we got Everett now. We got Eskridge. I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do. Oh, and, you know, we got Dwayne Brown and we got D. Lou. Oh, D. Lou. He was so great last year. Can you imagine how much better he's going to be this year? Then we got Posick.
I got the whole clip right here, Adam.
Okay.
Dwayne Brown's one of my closest friends. Think about D. Lou and what a player he. Think about a guy like Posick, who's been tremendous. I'm excited about Gabe Jackson. He's, you know, and then obviously Shell over there at right tackle, you know, and, you know, a guy like Kyle who stepped in to play center for us. You know, I love my teammates. Guys like Bobby Wagner, a guy I've played. This is going to be my 10th year with him. You know, I think about a guy like DK Metcalf. He's like my little brother, Tyler Lockett, who's. I think about the hard work Freddie Swain's put in, Chris Carson. I think about, you know, our Jamal Adams and how obviously Diggs and other guys as well. Gabe Jackson is a spectacular football player. I mean, watching his tape. And then D. Lou, the kind of player that he was last year, DK Metcalf, year one and year two. I mean, obviously D. Lou and obviously Gabe Jackson. And then and the rest of the fellas too. Watching guys like Penny Hart go full speed every rep, you know, guys like I mentioned earlier, Freddie Swain and DJ Dallas. I mean, his receivers, obviously Tyler. Obviously, DK. I'm excited to see Eskridge get out here and make some plays. Freddie Swain, Penny Hart, Gerald over here, who can really make some time together. Gerald, Colby, Disley. I mentioned all the guys earlier, but I think Dwayne to D. Lou to Posick to Gabe and him, his addition to Shell and Big Sed's competing too. I know Kyle, all these different guys, you know, Chris and all the running backs that we have. I'm excited about the receivers that we have. We got, I think, the best duo in the world, you know, in terms of Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf. I think we got the best tight end group. On top of it, I think we got a great defense that can really be special throughout this season coming up. And, you know, you got some tremendous players like Jamal and Diggs and Bobby and so many other guys, you know. And, you know, Dunlap, number eight now. He ran on the field, number eight. So I was like, who's that big guy? You know, we got so many great players, man. I'm excited, man. I couldn't be more excited than ever. I'm fired up about it all.
No repeats. There were no repeats in there, Adam. That was all of them. I got them all.
I had no idea you had cut that up like that. I really didn't. So that's hilarious. That fit in quite nicely. But yeah, I mean, it was a rust presser. I'm not even mad at him for saying what he says and how he says it and all that during these press conferences, because he doesn't have a choice. Like, that's the only thing you can do, because if you speak the truth one way or the other, you're either going to get fried or it's going to get blown out of proportion, taken out of context, whatever it is. Nobody wants that anymore, but yet they want it. And so then we end up with these joke shows.
See, when you had said that it was boring, I thought that that's where you were going to go. But no, it turns out that
the whole thing was boring.
I understand. But we did, we did get Russ to say the thing that all Seahawks fans wanted to hear.
You know, I love the city. I love this place. You know, I love everything about it from the moment I touched down to Seattle Children's to, you know, our Why Not You Academy to everything else that we have going on. This place has meant a lot. And ultimately, I love the fans. I love my teammates. I love this coaching staff. I love this building, you know. So every time I come up here, I get excited, you know, just to get ready to go again. And you know, every morning I wake up to win and wake up to win another Super Bowl for the Seattle Seahawks. And that's my mission.
Hey, he didn't say that he loved the Seahawks. He said he loved his teammates. He loved the building. He loved the fans. He never once said he loved the Seahawks in there. He's gone next year. He's out of here.
He's out of here. You know, there was one thing, though. There was one thing out of this press conference where, in terms of, you know, we mentioned it earlier that we thought that we covered it pretty well to this point. There was one thing that jumped out at me as a place where I know at least I screwed up. Because I was a little bit surprised when I heard the question about Russell Wilson being left off the letter to season ticket holders and hearing Russ's answer there.
Was the club confused too about your future?
I don't know. Those are, you know, I think there was a typo, or I don't know. Maybe there. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe there's a typo. Listen, I think that, you know, Chuck and I had a great conversation. Pete and I had a great conversation, John. You know, it's, you know, after that, and obviously that was a big thing during that time that made it a little bit, interesting, I think, in, along the way.
Because I was surprised that this was something that even that Russ would have needed to have a conversation about. It's a letter to season ticket holders in the off season. Like, who cares?
Yeah. Apparently, he has rabbit ears on that stuff. Cause for him, well, I don't know. I guess the media kind of ran with it when they figured that out, right? That his name wasn't on there.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I big stars have big egos. So maybe that's part of it. Maybe that's one of those things that kind of made it feel more like the real reality to him that this might happen, and kind of got his attention. And, you know, maybe that was a power move to be like, yeah, well, you know, we can move on without you, man.
Maybe it was part of it. I think that was one thing that we also discussed, is that John Schneider and Pete Carroll, they don't have any problem with their stars being talked about as being potential trade targets in the offseason, because we saw it with Earl. We saw it with Richard Sherman. We saw it. I don't know if we've ever really seen it with Bobby or Cam, but, you know, there have been those big time stars where Michael Bennett, you know, obviously came up in trade talks too, and mm-hmm. ultimately was traded. So it seems like every offseason there is the potential, and they're okay with that being out there.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's kind of part of Pete's mantra, right? The whole always compete thing is, you know, we're always looking to get better. So if it means getting rid of one of the star players to, you know, change things up or whatever it is that they think is going to make them a better team, right, with the assets that they get back in return, then they're going to do it. So yeah, I don't think it's any surprise that every single player on the roster is up for a potential trade. Now, are there some that are more likely than others? Absolutely. But, you know, it's within the realm of possibility. Now, you heard John say months ago, he's like, yeah, no, I didn't. I entertained the calls, but like, wasn't
no
close.
Active negotiations, I think this is.
Yeah. Kick of the tires, you know?
Well, and that's the thing that I keep pointing to. If the Seahawks absolutely wanted to trade him, the opportunity was there. Oh, if Russell absolutely wanted to be traded, the opportunity was there.
Yep.
And, you know, why would he want a no trade clause in the first place if it wasn't his intent to stay in Seattle, knowing that the Seahawks every offseason like to shop their star players, or at least make it known that the talks are, that the phone is, that nobody's going to be hanging up the phone.
Yeah, I was going to say, they're going to pick up the phone no matter what, right? No matter who they're calling about. And that's fine. What I found interesting is how reluctant the whole media is in accepting that Pete, Russ, and John are good now. They're really seeming to struggle with that. Oh, well, maybe, you know, maybe for the moment, or this is all just smoke. They really aren't cool. And yeah, this is all still going down next year.
Yeah.
They just can't accept it. They can't accept that people operated like adults. They had a problem, they worked through it, and now we're fine. That doesn't compute into a nice story.
Yeah. Like when a husband and wife have a fight, they're supposed to get divorced. Like there's no making up after a big fight.
That's exactly right. And so, yeah, then they wanted a trade. So that parlays into a story. And then all the stories about Russ with his new team. And then all the stories about, ooh, did John Schneider make the right call? And blah, blah. They robbed them of all of that. And now they're pissy about it.
Now what are we going to talk about? Just Aaron Rodgers, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, we could criticize Russ for having the line almost teed up with one of his answers and then just not even be able to stick the landing on this.
I feel better. I feel faster. I feel stronger. I feel smarter. I feel younger. I feel more dangerous. And I just
like that was so clunky. And I feel like Russ needed some help. And here it is.
I feel better. I feel faster. I feel stronger. I feel smarter. I feel younger. I feel more dangerous.
See, how hard was that? Stick the landing, Russ.
But what's the difference there?
He throws an in there and then he goes right into saying, and he needs to stick the landing with, I feel more dangerous.
I feel better. I feel faster. I feel stronger. I feel smarter. I feel younger. I feel more dangerous. And I feel better. I feel faster. I feel stronger. I feel smarter. I feel younger. I feel more dangerous.
Okay. So it struggled it. He stuck the landing with the way you edited it.
Needed a little help.
Yeah. Hey, I thought it was fine. I mean, again, there's your off-season chatter, right? I feel lighter. I feel stronger. I feel faster. I feel younger. I feel taller. I feel more dangerous.
That's my mission. That's my goal. And that's why I'm here today and ready to roll.
That has a nice ring to it. He stuck that.
So yeah, that's what we got to hear from Russ.
Cool. Yep. So that happened. And then Pete talked and I couldn't bring myself to watch it. Couldn't do it.
No,
it's okay. I figured you'd have a couple clips and some thoughts and we could go from there. But yeah.
Well, I think the biggest thing to come from Pete, again, it was I think we addressed it in terms of the new offense and tempo and how he's kind of taken a hands-off approach. And because Shane has, you know, such a good hold on a good grasp on the offense and is teaching it in such a great way to all the guys that, yeah, it's again, it's the stuff that you hear in the offseason. I think the biggest thing that we were curious about what Pete had to say was if he had anything at all with regard to the state of the contract talks with Jamal Adams, because Adams not there at this, mm-hmm. this final mini camp before training camp where they were wondering if he was going to show up, but apparently he had a family thing, quote unquote, and hopefully it's not like a serious family thing. And hopefully it's a family thing in terms of it's an excuse to get him out of camp so he doesn't have to take a fine. But yeah, Pete was asked if he had anything to say on the state of the contract talks.
Not really. It's been ongoing and it's been amicable throughout. You know, we recognize that he's a fantastic football player and we're in the midst of a, you know, it's a big contract process. But I know he knows he's been treated with a lot of respect and he's been very respectful towards the club as well. They've been good talks and just hasn't been able to get settled at this point, but it's coming. We expect him for camp and everything should be fine.
I like hearing at the end, we expect him for camp.
Yeah, so it's close, which isn't a surprise. You give up that kind of draft capital for a dude, you're going to come to terms on a contract. You are going to come to terms on a contract. There is no other way that goes at all.
Well, as long as everybody has a fair idea of what the number is. And
yeah,
it seems to me like the negotiations must be going well if Jamal is excused from a mini camp where he's probably not going to be doing anything anyway. Pete said, oh, he's still recovering from his finger surgery and his, yeah, all his off-season surgeries, which fine.
Okay. Yeah. Cause that, I felt like they rolled the story out as if the main reason he wasn't there was likely the contract. And for me, the main reason was likely, do you remember how his whole body exploded towards the end of the year and he needed like 4 surgeries?
Yeah.
Yeah. What's he going to be doing there anyways? No, just stay home. Guess what you know how to do, Jamal? Play football. I don't need you here for all this stuff. Get healed up. We'll finish up this contract nonsense and don't worry about it.
he missed out on training camp last year, and he came into the season, and yes, he fought through some injuries, but you know, he had 9.5 sacks and had 4 interceptions that he should have had, but dropped because his fingers were broken.
So yeah, exactly.
And missed a bunch of tackles because his shoulder was jacked up.
Right. So just please heal up so you can finish and complete those plays, right?
We want the healthy Jamal, the one that's probably going to be making upwards of the top safety in the league this year.
Yeah. You just pay him that. He's a game wrecker.
I think that a lot of the discussion, though, these past couple weeks is just how much more above the top of the safety market that he might get. And I'm curious to see what it might be. Judging by the commentary and the way the contracts have been going for the Seahawks this offseason, I feel like it's going to be a lot closer to the top of the safety market than it is going to be surpassing Bobby Wagner's $18 million per year at linebacker.
Right. I think, unfortunately for Jamal, with the cap the way it is this year,
I don't think the cap impacts his number this year at all anyway, because the way Seattle has operated, they've always said, okay, well, this is what you're making this year. And yes, we can, if you want to factor in the new amount into the current amount, to however your agent wants to put it out and flex the numbers after the contract goes through. But what you're making in 2021 is what you're going to be making. It's just, you're going to have that, the guaranteed money on top of it coming to you this year.
Well, I guess kind of what I was trying to get at more was the idea that the cap is a lot lower this year because of unforeseen circumstances, right? With COVID. So now as the GM, that's something that, when you're talking to his agent, and the agent's like, well, in 22, the cap's going to go up at least $30 million. Look at all this TV money coming in. Blah, 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 blah. Well, I'd like to think that, Mr. Agent Guy, but you never know. I mean, we could have another variant that sweeps through or whatever like that. That's counting our chickens before they're hatched. So we need to kind of play by the numbers where we're at now and kind of negotiate off of that. And I'm sure that's how negotiations work, right? You're trying to use your leverage as best you can one way or the other.
Yeah, and that's probably the basic stuff in the beginning, I would think, right? I have no idea how contract negotiations go, so
whatever they're circling around right now is the small potatoes of it.
All the nooks and crannies of contract negotiations.
Exactly. But I think Pete answered that, my guess would be is that the bones of that contract are set. They know where they're at that way.
It all depends on what the player wants to get out of it, right? Because does he want to have the most guaranteed money of a defensive back, say? Then you look at Jalen Ramsey's contract and how he got $43 million guaranteed. And okay, well, are they going to go $44 million guaranteed for Jamal? And then, okay, if that's what you want, then you have to maybe give an extra year in terms of your contract so we can spread out the guaranteed money over 5 years rather than 4 years. And yeah, that feels to me more like the more difficult negotiations probably happen, because you're trying to find out what the player wants the most and what the agent may want the most in terms of what they can say that they got for their player.
Oh, absolutely. And I think the other struggle for Jamal here a little bit is, and really for John as well, is what position do you pay Jamal as?
that's the difficult thing, because
he's just a game wrecker. He's not really, I mean, he is a safety, but he's not really a safety. He can be an edge. He can be a linebacker.
He plays more in the box like a linebacker, but he comes off the edge more like an outside linebacker / pass rusher, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's finding where to slot his pay scale in terms of, what position does he fit in as? And I think that's why there is a little bit, everybody says that, well, Jamal has all the leverage because the Seahawks gave up 2 first round picks. And it's like, well, the Seahawks have a little bit of leverage too. Like, they got him out of New York where he wanted out of. And they also are giving him the opportunity to put up these big numbers and to be considered one of the top players in the league. So, yeah, I think there's leverage on both sides of this. And he still has a year left on his deal. And if he wants the contract now going into the season, so because he does play so physical, they have a little bit of leverage to say, well, if you want these injury guarantees, you want to get them in before this year, because gosh, if you get injured this season, then you know, who's going to be paying you this big money come next offseason.
100%, Brandon. You nailed that. That's the exact leverage that the Seahawks have. Is just, hey, man, get your cheddar now, you know, because look at Cam Chancellor. Like, there's no guarantee for tomorrow, right?
Right.
Your career can be over in an instant, especially the way you play. So, yeah, I do think it just makes all the sense in the world that they're close and it's going to be done here shortly and it's all going to be good. And there's going to be a camp of people that come out and say, oh, you can't pay a box safety, things like that. And there's going to be people that be like, oh my gosh, he got screwed. You can't put a value on Jamal Adams. Right. You know, like nobody, it'd still be all these stories that nobody's happy with Jamal's contract, but just the only person that has to be is Jamal. So
that's absolutely going to happen. And you're already hearing it happen. I was listening to the SB Nation guys and there's a Niners fan, Rob Stats. Well, you remember Stats from Pro Football Talk.
Yeah.
Niners fan. And so now he's on SB Nation and doing the national show. And oh my gosh, they just nailed the fact that Jamal Adams, oh, he's a safety who can't even cover. He got a PFF gave him a coverage grade of 50 last season in 2020. So why would you pay a safety who can't even cover?
Right. Yeah. It's like that rationalization would be similar to this, Brandon. Why in the world would you pay Tom Brady all that money? A quarterback who can't run. He can't run. Yeah. You can't possibly pay him that money. His PFF running score was the lowest of all the quarterbacks. It just, you pick their worst attribute and then like forget all the great stuff they do and then be like, oh, he's trash.
Oh, Russell Wilson, you can't pay a quarterback who's not even 6 feet tall. He's short. Yeah.
It's unbelievable, man.
Yeah, you pick the worst attribute or, you know, you pick the worst plays because it's not as though Jamal can't cover. He saw him right with the Jets in 2019 and in 2018. He was great in coverage. So
yeah, and didn't he have a groin issue as well?
Groin, shoulder, yeah. Broken fingers. Okay.
What's the number one thing you have to do to cover?
Yeah, run.
Run. You know what's hard to do when your groin's torn?
Run.
Run. But he only has a PFF score of 50 because, oh, of course, that's the holy grail, number one. And then number two, let's just glossing over. No, you know, all the other things, 9.5 sacks, whatever, fine.
Nine and a half sacks, all the tackles for a loss that he had,
yeah.
The number one safety in terms of TFLs in the entire league by a lot.
Mm-hmm. By a lot. And an emotional leader on the team as well.
Don't talk about that. That's not important.
No, it's not important. His PFF coverage score was whatever they said it was.
Too low.
Yeah. Don't give him a dime.
Michael Dixon's coverage score in PFF, not too low. He signed a big contract, Adam.
Yeah, I did see that. That was cool. There is something to be said for having your kicking guys locked in long-term that you feel really good about. I mean, between Myers and Dixon, right? Like, you got to feel great about the kicking game.
Oh, yeah.
So I was stoked to see that.
And when you look at the contract, it's reasonable. They nailed it.
They nailed it.
If Dixon's happy, the Seahawks are happy. Mm-hmm. I think he came in terms of over the next 4 years, because, yes, he was locked into the salary that he was going to make in 2021. He gets $7.5 million in fully guaranteed money. I think it was a $6.5 million bonus. So he gets a bunch of money this year and he is locked in. I think the next 4 years, it averaged out just under $4 million, right about $4 million, which is, you know, at the top of the pay charts for punters.
Sure. And I think at this point, seeing that Dixon has made it to his second contract and, you know, is a successful player, I think we can all like thumb our nose in the face of everybody who made fun of John Schneider for drafting a punter when he did.
You can't draft a punter in the fifth round, Adam.
Can't do it.
There's all those other great players that are available past 148 overall that you should be considering before you draft a punter.
Absolutely.
I mean, Tom Brady was drafted after the fifth round.
Yeah. Yeah. And you pull a Tom Brady out of those rounds like what? Three times a year, right?
All the time.
I just remember, you know, people having some outrage over drafting a punter in the fifth round. It was ridiculous.
Well, yeah. It turned out to be an okay pick.
Yeah, it seemed to work out. Keystone of a third of the game for you. Special teams.
Dwayne Brown wants a new contract.
Yeah, sure he does.
This was good news to me.
Yeah, restructure, get a little more cap room.
Well, I suppose there's that, but that means Dwayne Brown wants to play longer. Like, with the age that Dwayne Brown is, like, I was getting concerned that I was thinking, man, I hope he doesn't retire this offseason, because if he does, the Seahawks are screwed at left tackle. And so if Dwayne thinks he can play for 2-3 more years, this is great news to me.
Oh, yeah. That is actually a great way to look at it, because, well, I don't know, maybe you're looking for that deal if you feel like your body's about to wear out just to secure the bag one more time. But he doesn't seem like the type of guy who would want to take a bunch of money for doing nothing.
No, you know? Don't think so.
No. So if he does feel up to that task, heck yeah, man. Sign me up.
2-3 more years, they can get the numbers mm-hmm. worked out. They can, shoot, maybe there is enough cap room then that once training camp rolls around and you see some of the veterans who are still out there, and maybe you have a chance to evaluate the rookies and see where there may be some deficiencies. Maybe that's when guys like KJ Wright get signed back to the team. Maybe Richard Sherman.
Well, it seems to me that the Sherman thing is on pause until they figure out whether or not they can get Gilmore.
The way that Pete talked about, or no, it was the way Sherman talked about it. He said that the things had to go the right way. It was something mm-hmm. to that effect.
Yeah.
And so I'm thinking, okay, well, maybe it's Gilmore. Maybe it's whether or not they see how Witherspoon, you know, if he can make it through training camp without getting injured. Because, you know, obviously mm-hmm. if he gets injured going into the season, then yeah, then you call up Sherman.
There you go.
There's just things that could happen. And if that's the way they go, then like with Daryl Taylor, how he responds to his injuries, once they have a chance to see that, then maybe KJ. None of these guys want to come in for June minicamp stuff anyway. So this is all going to happen in August, whether they go to the Seahawks or whether they go to another team.
Exactly. When you're that veteran of a player, I mean, really this minicamps and all that, that's totally not worth your time. You just don't need to be there for that.
Okay, one more thing before we get to the second half of the show. Julio Jones, we talked about him on the last mm-hmm. show. He goes to the Titans, which
for too much
made a ton of sense. Too much in terms of draft picks or in terms yeah. of, I mean, I guess we haven't heard him chirp about wanting a new contract. Although with Julio Jones, he reminds me a lot of Michael Bennett in that every offseason he is talking about wanting a new contract.
Yeah, yeah. Him in like Bennett, Revis, yeah. similar that way.
Although Revis usually just did a short-term contract, whereas...
Well, that's what he started doing. Because yeah. at first, that's what it was. He wasn't doing that. And he was like, well, wait a second. I just want a new deal every year anyways. Let's just go year to year.
Right.
I still don't understand why guys don't do that.
I suppose that's in some ways, teams are reluctant to do that with certain players. Like, they want a little bit of a commitment. And at the same token, I think players want to have a little bit of security beyond 1 year. In case they do get injured, and yeah. I think there's a little bit of both on
sure
a benefit to both.
Not everybody's a straight merc like Revis. Right. Yeah.
Don't want to have to move every year. On one end, it's like, okay, yeah, Julio would have been fun to have that trio of wide receivers. And then on the other hand, it was great to see that he went to the AFC because, hey, yeah, okay, mm-hmm. we have to face him week two, but at least he didn't go to a rival.
Absolutely, and I'm really glad we didn't give up a second for him. That's too much.
Well, again, this goes back to what we said before. Why are the Falcons trading him? Mm-hmm. Especially when it comes to... I looked at it in the fact that they had Julio that was making, or set to make, you know, his big salary this year, but they also have Grady Jarrett on the defensive line in Atlanta. And I saw Atlanta fans saying and pointing out, if we're going to make room and we want to make a run this year, why don't we either extend Jarrett to get his cap number lower, or, you know, considering the way that defensive tackles have been, getting paid this offseason. Gosh, you wonder if you couldn't cut him and get him to take a lower salary than going into this year, kind of similar to what his numbers aren't that much different than Jaron Reed's numbers in production. Now, I think if you were to ask me, would I rather have Grady Jarrett or Jaron Reed? The answer would be Grady Jarrett. But yeah, in terms of what you get out of having a guy in the middle of the line, he's not Aaron Donald. I mean, that's obvious when you're talking about any defensive tackle. But my point is that if the Falcons were dead set on keeping Julio Jones, they had the opportunity to make moves in other places that I think would have impacted the team less and kept that offense dangerous with the Julio Jones that I think we all have known to and come to expect over these past few years. And they're going to know Julio more than anybody else. So I always get suspicious when you're giving up a future Hall of Fame player.
Oh, without question. And I know a couple of people had kind of chimed in that we had missed some guys that had succeeded, you know, later on in their careers. And like, we were kind of talking more about receivers in their mid 30s, right? So people brought up Joe Montana and it's like, yeah, you know, he did have some success with the Chiefs and, things like that. But my gut tells me that the Titans are going to regret giving up a second rounder for him. If somebody had given up like a fourth, I think the type of production you're going to get out of him, especially in that offense, yeah, that might equate. But I think a two was too much.
I don't know why.
And what is it? What is it with Julio? Does he only play with quarterbacks with Ryan in their name?
Maybe. Makes it easier,
I guess.
Why not just keep Corey Davis? Why allow him to go to the Jets?
Yeah, do you feel like that's an actual upgrade for them?
No.
It feels like a lateral move, right?
I like Davis a lot.
Yeah.
And he's younger.
It feels like a lateral move for this year. And Davis had more upside long term.
He got a really nice payday from the Jets, but
yeah, good for him.
And I suppose you get the way the compensatory picks work it out. No, I think it would have been better. I think it would have been better for them to keep Davis.
I agree.
All right. So, well, now that we got the Titans situation worked out, we'll get to see them week two. That makes that game more exciting. That's the game that you and I are planning to be at, Adam. And
yes, absolutely.
We have another reason to be a little more excited about that game now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That will be the game that Julio has the best game of his season and makes me look like an idiot while I'm sitting in the stands. That's probably what's going to happen.
Considering the way the secondary is shaking out, it's going to answer some questions about our secondary, I think, early on in the season.
Sure. I actually have some thoughts about, or a question to ask you in terms of like, how worried are you about the defense this year? Like, how much is that something that you think about, something that's on your mind? Like the type of thing, like, is this an issue?
All right. Well, let me think about it and we'll talk about it after the break.
Okay.
All right. Going into the break, Adam, you asked me about the defense and I guess how much thought I
how much put you in. Care about it. How much do you care about what you see on the field out of the defense this year?
I think the defense is going to be important to the Seahawks' success. I think especially more on the defensive line in terms of the success that they can have, because I'm still confident about the linebacker group and confident about Quandre Diggs and Jamal Adams on the back end. I guess the question that I've asked myself, well, I think we can all say that cornerback is probably the biggest weakness on the defense. But at the same time, is it bad that corner is the biggest weakness of the defense? Because what were we saying when it came time for Shaquille Griffin to get his money this offseason? We were saying, well, you should let Shaquille go because the Seahawks are good at developing corners. And so that is an issue that should get resolved come time once they have a chance to get into training camp and see who the best of the best is. And the top guys will make it and they'll be competent and you don't want to spend a lot of money at the cornerback spot. And so it's hard to criticize the team too much for doing what you really asked them to do going into the offseason. But it still has the capability to be the team's biggest weakness.
And Carlos Dunlap really did answer the question of chicken or the egg, which came first when it came to pass rush versus good coverage.
Yeah.
Yeah. We tried the good coverage thing last year and got torched with no pass rush. The second Dunlap enters the equation and the pass rush picks up, suddenly the coverage looks pretty good. So how much does it matter about the DBs at this point? I don't know. I don't know. I don't think it matters nearly as much as your pass rush. But the reason I asked you that question was this. I was sitting here thinking about it. I was actually talking with the DCH about it. And I was like, you know, this is out of the last 5-6 years, the one year where I'm like, you could tell me this team could have anywhere from 4 wins to undefeated this year. And you could make a case for that that is valid, right? Like, I really don't know what to expect. All I really care about this year is that the offense comes out and doesn't look like that last 8 weeks of the season. And Russ is having a great year. The receivers look good. Waldy seems to be dialing it up good. Pete seems happy with it. All that. That's all I care about. That's all I care about. Because that's going to keep Russ in our lives for the next 10 years. The defense will be what it will be this year. The record will be what it will be. I don't really care. I just want the offense to run smooth. That's all I'm looking for this year.
I still want the defense to be competent and average.
If it is, that would be fantastic. And it turns into like a 14-win season or something like that. Great. I'm all about it. But I'm just saying, out of all the things that I really want to see, I want that offense to be right for an entire year.
Do you think it would be enough to keep things together if they're coming out week after week and Russ has to score 40 points just for this team to win and they lose again in the first round of the playoffs?
Yep.
You think that's enough?
I do. Because if there's anything this offseason proved to me about Russ, is it is a little bit more about him and his personal legacy than it is about chips, as much as he says it.
So as long as Russ throws for 5,000 yards, the defense can do whatever.
As long as he gets like his MVP votes this year and, you know, just all the accolades and looks really good and he goes down swinging with the ball in his hands.
Okay.
I think that's all that matters.
I hope it turns into wins that way.
Yeah, you and me both. But I don't know. And I do have some hope for the defense. I'm not just saying like I really don't care. I mean, I do.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's going to be the big question, right? Like, did the NFL break Russ those last 8 weeks, or is the rest of his career more indicative of who he is? And I would say that that's more the case.
I think the deeper question with the defense is, are we okay as fans with Carlos Dunlap wearing number 8?
Sure. It's going to be really odd and a little weird to get used to for a while. And I wanted to be mad about this. I did. But then I was like, it just doesn't matter and we're all going to be fine.
I still like it more than receivers wearing digits in the teens. I don't think I'll ever get used to that. I think I'll get used to this first I get used to receivers with digits in
some
the teens.
D end and like a number 2.
Yeah.
You're going to be fine with that.
Yeah.
But DK Metcalf at a 14. Nope. Can't have it.
Nope.
Get your ass into an 80s number.
80s or single digits. I think receivers in single digits is cool.
Oh, okay.
I don't know why, but, you know. I feel like I should be more upset with Carlos Dunlap wearing Matt Hasselbeck's number than I am. But I'm not. I'm not upset about it at all. Like, I get more upset about a dude wearing 17 than I do with Dunlap wearing Hasselbeck's number.
Wow. I didn't even occur to me. I didn't even think about it.
Really?
I really didn't. It did not even cross my mind.
Huh.
That's crazy. I can't believe that. Huh.
Why do you suppose that is?
I didn't think about it for 2 seconds.
Are you not enough of a Matt Hasselbeck fan?
Apparently not. And I love me some Hasselbeck, you know, but I don't know.
There is a component of offense versus defense. Like if a dude came in who was a quarterback and wore number 8, you might question that a little bit. Whereas Travis Homer wearing 25, it's like, okay, well, once Sherman comes back to the team, Homer's just going to give that number up anyway.
Right. So who cares, right?
Right.
No, I agree. I think if it would have been a quarterback, it definitely would have hit me. But yeah, being it was Dunlap, it just didn't compute.
Didn't even compute.
Wow, that's pathetic by me. I'm really sad about myself right now.
Oh, well, you know, it'll only be documented for the entire future of your Seahawks fandom here now.
That's exactly right. Just out here on the public airways for all of you to point and laugh at the radio. It's great.
Well, what do you say we move on to some people, welcome some new members of the flock? They aren't pointing and laughing at you.
No, not yet. But they might just jump right back out of the flock after hearing that, just out of sheer disappointment.
Well, let's start off by thanking our executive producers, Dustin Mock, Brian Shaw, and of course, the DCH, who came in with his annual executive producer donation. I forgot about last year and the fact that he gave us a big donation last year, and I didn't even put him in among the executive producers all year long. Right. That was my big mistake. And then he comes in with $1,000 and and here he is. So now I'm going to be sure, Dave, that you are recognized as an executive producer throughout the year.
Did you just call Doug Dave and then say you're going to recognize him as an executive producer? That's worse than the Hasselback thing. Yeah.
God. Catfish!
Yeah, you can't cut this out now because it's great. That's okay. We all know that that Donald, David, Doug, whoever it is that gave us a bunch of money and spent the weekend here doesn't really matter anyways.
I'm so mad that I didn't get to come down for that.
I know. We missed you, buddy. We missed you.
I had sick kids. I had yard work it's been a disaster here.
Yeah. Hey, I understand. It is a disaster here right now.
Oh?
Yeah. After having about 30 people in the Gulch for the weekend.
Oh, you had a big party.
Oh my gosh. I am wore out, dude.
You were rocking
the idea of sitting down and talking for 2 hours, even though it was with you and about the Seahawks and all things I love.
Yeah.
Whoo-wee. I was struggling, so I appreciate the little flockers for coming in and making it worth it, you know, because damn. And then not only that, but then the reality of it was, is I had to talk about the reality of Russ's press conference and the real reality that came out of that.
The real reality.
Yeah.
Well, see, I was talking to Dave about I'm just going to call him Dave now.
Yeah.
The D stands for all kinds of
whatever you want, apparently.
Whatever you want it to be. We got to figure out a game that we're going to go to because Dave can't make the Titans game.
Yeah, I know. He's talking about coming to Houston.
I know, but we also need a Seattle game too.
Oh, okay.
So,
but we'll see how what the schedule allows for.
We may have to do Rams. We may have to do Cardinals. One of the two.
Okay.
Rams is Thursday night. Cardinals is November, but it's also the military appreciation game. So I kind of feel. Like for me, that's the one I should go to, but
okay. We'll see how the wheel grinding schedule goes.
Can you get out of the Gulch with the snow in November?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
I have multiple Jeeps.
Multiple Jeeps.
Yeah.
Well, you and Doug got to party in the Gulch.
Yeah. A little MCH too. It was a good time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we got some,
he got to shoot BB guns
and he got to scope out the site of the new hobo shack that he's, are you going to name it the Dave Hobo Shack?
I don't know. It's a little longer than the title I was going to put on it, but maybe that's it.
Dave's not here.
Annual commemoratory Dave CH Hobo Pod Shack.
It's okay if it's long.
Yeah. Well, he came to help me build on it. Unfortunately, the shed that I was going to get here to like then add on off to,
yeah,
to put the Hobo Shack, you know, Pod Shack on, just arrived like an hour before we started talking.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
Well, now I'm going to
we were just a weekend off. Yeah.
And help hammer some nails or something.
There we go. We're going with screws, but okay.
Whatever.
10% on that.
I can nail screws too. I've done it before.
True.
Well, a big thanks to Doug and for coming in with that annual donation. And big help for the show. Big thanks to Eric Lee, who we welcomed to the flock, came in at $1 a month. So welcome to the flock to Eric.
Heck yeah, man. See, that's what I needed. I needed that pick me up from Eric.
Absolutely. Liad Levi over there in Israel, he gave us a raise from $3 a month to $60 for the year. So a big thanks to Liad.
Oh, heck yeah, buddy. I appreciate that. That's a big old raise, too. It's a fatty.
Yeah, I'm just thankful for everybody that supports the show. You know, One thing that we haven't brought up yet, but man, it was a bummer. I don't know if you saw this on Twitter, but Joe Fan, it sounds like he's going to have to move on because NBC Sports Northwest is they're losing the Blazers or something. So they're having to cut a bunch of reporters, and Joe Fan's going to be, I don't know what he's going to be doing next, but hopefully he's covering the Seahawks, but not for NBC Sports Northwest, apparently.
Yeah. Yeah. And he was one of the better of the guys when it came to being one of the beat writers. So yeah, it'll be missed a little bit, and who knows, maybe we'll see him back. Like the guy, liked his content.
But see, it's people that support us. We're not it makes it so we don't have to go away. That was one of my takeaway when I saw that. I thought, oh, I mean, that's too bad. But it also makes me thankful for, like, yeah, we can keep on going because we don't have to worry about some company losing a contract and having to fire all its employees.
No corporate daddy for us. You exactly. Guys are our daddy.
Exactly. Well, thanks to everyone who gave us a raise, new members of the flock, and a note for anyone to go to tinypiecesofseahawksstuff.com. The June Tiny Pieces of Seahawks Stuff is a Kristen Michael signed mini helmet. So you can go there, comment, yeah. Go Hawks. And at the end of the month, we will pick a winner for that Kristen Michael autographed helmet.
Yep. That'll be awesome.
All right, quick message here. Saban came in with a question. One of our members of the flock said, random thought, since it took John Ursua so long to pick up the last playbook, how do you think he will do it picking up an even more intricate one in Shane Waldron's?
Well, I would imagine after a year in an NFL system, right, that, and also having an actual mini camp and OTAs and all that stuff that he didn't get a chance to have last year because of the COVID stuff. I think it'd be just fine at picking up the playbook, and he's going to have to, man, because the competition on the bottom end of the receivers here is fierce.
Oh yeah. I'm almost resigned to the idea that Ursua will probably, if he makes the practice squad, great. And yeah, he didn't have much offseason last year, but he had 2019 after his rookie season to develop. So, you know, he's going into his third year now.
Oh, I thought this was year two for some reason. Okay.
Going to year three. So he's got to get it worked out. But yeah, there's a lot of competition there. Mm-hmm. One guy who's not going to be competing that Saban references, BJ Emmons, waived already. He said, I was hoping he was a stud. I was hoping he'd be a stud. I heard good things about him. And yeah, that's why in terms of offseason roster, like the undrafted free agent guys, it's tough to get into those guys too much because, yeah, they ultimately come and go before season starts. And yeah, it's tough to get too locked in on guys until even you start watching them, at least in preseason games.
Yeah, I can't have preseason or crushes on these guys that are on the fringes of making the roster until I see preseason games and I develop my preseason crushes. Like,
yes.
Yeah, I got to see it.
And we get to do that this year, so that'll be nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What do you say we get on to some do better and better at life?
All right, man. My do better is for whoever Generation Z is. I'm not sure exactly who that is. Is that after millennials?
Yeah, it's got to be.
Or does it not include before. Millennials?
No,
I don't know. It's a whoever totally they are, one. Whoever they are, they're screwing the pooch here because here's the title from CNN. Wolf cuts, Gen Z's answer to the mullet hairstyle. Apparently, this is a trend that's sweeping the nation throughout these young people. They're trying to bring back the mullet and then rename it a wolf cut. Nope, doesn't work. The mullet's a trash hairstyle for trashy people and trashy trailer parks. Trust me, I know that's where I've always grown up. Like I've been in a trailer park the majority of my life. You can't just bring back the mullet and recall it a wolf cut, think it's going to be cool, and then go from there. It's stupid. Leave the mullet dead and buried with Billy Ray Cyrus. This is ridiculous. I know he's still alive, but he's not pertinent anymore is the point. No more mullets. Gen Z, do better.
I think Billy Ray Cyrus was the only person to get a pass on rocking the mullet to where it was somewhat acceptable.
Agassi did it for a minute.
He made that look good.
That was also during his drug years,
the difference was Agassi had the wolf cut before it was the wolf cut. That wasn't a mullet.
No, that was a mullet. That's what, and it is what it is. It's like taking the pound sign and renaming it hashtag. A whole generation just decided like they're just changing something. Nope.
Okay. Well, the
what are we gonna call cars next? Kites.
The millennials whips, got the hashtag
whips. We're gonna call all cars whips now. That's not what a car is. A whip is a whip. A car is a car.
Is that Gen Z, or is that the tail end of the millennials?
I don't care what generation it is. It's just stupid. And get off my lawn.
Yeah, I'm sure our generation didn't have any of that.
No, we're perfect.
Yeah, we made up a whole new era of music, grunge music. Like, that wasn't a thing but until Gen X came around.
Right, but we took something from scratch. See, we didn't just, like, steal something from, you know, somewhere else and then call it our own.
So take that, other generations.
Eat it. Make up your own shitfish.
Yeah, don't just steal something and call it different.
You're the Milli Vanilli of generations.
Well, moving on, Adam, my do better is for any news organization using the phrase is getting criticism on Twitter when talking about any decision at all, whether it's sports or politics. I turned on two different radio stations the other day, and they both used this phrase that there was some decision and they were looking at it each different ways. And use the exact same phrase, you know, that decision. It's getting a lot of criticism on Twitter. Yeah, take any decision of anything and you can go to Twitter and find criticism. Like, that's not hard. You're saying things that are absolutely redundant. Like, you could say, oh, the Seahawks' decision to not trade back when it came time to pick in the second round. That got a lot of criticism on Twitter. The decision to not trade Russell Wilson this offseason. It's getting criticism on Twitter. That's what Twitter is. It's where people go to criticize things. So you don't need to point to that as some kind of big newsworthy thing that, people are criticizing things on Twitter. So for that, do better.
Yeah. I mean, isn't that like literally all Twitter is criticism? Like it would be more of a story if they're like, well, you know, that's getting a lot of praise on Twitter.
No, nobody's mad about it on Twitter.
Yeah. Turns out everybody's chill about it on Twitter.
Yeah.
I mean, it's about as surprising saying, yeah, they're getting criticized on Twitter as saying, like, you know, I'm getting criticized by my mom. Like, it's just not surprising either way.
Your mom is going to be critical of you no matter what.
Yeah.
And you
so
just
is
know
Twitter.
So is Twitter.
So say it with me. If it happens on Twitter,
it doesn't matter.
And if your mom tells you something, it doesn't matter.
Well, you got to take who your mom is into account.
So says you.
Just because she likes Lisa Moore.
They all like Lisa Moore. It's a bunch of crap. I'm going to go cry myself to sleep tonight.
On to Better at Life.
All right, man. My Better at Life than Skip Bayless this week is for a publication called The Conversation. Never heard of him before. And the author was Nicole Kraft. And I'm just going to read the title here. And I just feel like this fits so nicely with today's discussion. Sports writers could ditch the clown questions and do better when it comes to press conferences. And she goes through and just like actually just documents some of the dumbest things these guys get asked, right?
Yeah.
And the best one was this reporter was asking some players from Butler how they got out rebounded by Yale. It's like, so how is it that you guys got out rebounded by Yale? And the guy goes, what? He's like, how did that happen? And he goes, the player, I love this player. He goes, well, when they shoot the ball and it doesn't go in the rim, you reach out with two hands and you grab the ball and that's considered a rebound. And they did that more than us.
They did that more. So that's how they accomplished that feat.
Yeah, yeah. And so for Nicole Kraft in The Conversation for pointing out what needs to be pointed out in the media by the media to the media that their clown show needs to stop. Better at Life than Skip Bayless. Good stuff.
We just need more answers like that from players. Like, stop.
Yeah, they do just need to mock them straight back.
Stop trying to give them the benefit of the doubt. And yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like how much heat did Marshawn take for I'm just here so I don't get fined?
got a little bit of heat. I feel like he was
a tiny bit. Did he get a lot more praise?
Yeah.
Everybody's ready for it.
It's also, where do you get the most clown questions? It's during Super Bowl media day. Because there's
people
literally dressed up as clowns asking questions.
Right, right, right. And I mean, of course that's the worst, but it's all the, I mean, geez, we just went through it today. Hey, Russ, you know that dead horse that died like 3 months ago? You know how it's dead, still's dead, and is, you know, we need to talk about. The reality is, I want to ask you a question and just hit that over the head one more time. Can we go back to those greatest hits that we made up about you? Can we do that, please?
I didn't think that any of those questions were out of bounds, though, in terms of, or just being dumb. I just think that they were the standard questions that probably should have been addressed a while ago.
It's not that. It's that they're late.
They didn't have an opportunity to deliver them on time.
Well, so what? Tough break. Them's the breaks.
Yeah, you think that they're just going to let... Whether Russ didn't even speak to the media until training camp, I think that those questions still would have been there come August.
Yeah, probably, because people can't just let things go.
Of course not.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's close this out. My Better at Life this week, I'm going to give it to Ryan Fitzpatrick, Adam. He's awesome.
He is.
And I can't even dislike the guy because, you know, for as long as he's been in the league and, you know, he doesn't get to stick around with Miami, but has an opportunity to start in Washington now. He shows up and he's got one of those signs that you would have your grade schooler hold up before the first day of school. And in fact, it must be that exact sign because it says Ryan's first day of year 17. My teacher is Mr. Rivera. I'm 38 years old. I'm 74 inches tall. And my friends are Terry and Curtis. And he's holding up the sign. He's in his football team uniform and just, you know, deadpan look on his face with his big, bushy, awesome beard. If this guy, if NFL players could make the Hall of Fame for just being awesome, Ryan Fitzpatrick would be a first ballot Hall of Famer. There's not a Hall of Fame for that, but there is a Better at Life than Skip Bayless. And that's what he's getting this week. Ryan Fitzpatrick, Better at Life than Skip Bayless.
You know, it hasn't happened before, but he has the best chance of any to be nominated to go into the Hall of Fame for just being catfish. Cool.
He does.
Yeah.
This, and that's probably why there's the 5-year waiting period for a Hall of Fame, because if he just retired and reporters said, well, that guy was cool, like, we should put him in the Hall of Fame. And then five years later, you're like, oh, yeah, that guy was cool, but he didn't really do anything worthy of being in the Hall of Fame in terms of his play on the field. But there needs to be a Hall of Fame for awesome dudes.
Yep, maybe he could be in the Hall of Fame for the ultimate boomer bust player.
Yeah.
Or the really good for no money, but terrible for big money player. Like, every time he got paid big money, things went south.
The value Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
I don't know who he'd be in there with, but...
Us. We're the Value Hall of Fame, Brandon. You and me. We're the founding members of the Value Hall of Fame.
Yes. Put it on a plaque. We'll hang it up on the wall of the Dave Memorial Podcast Hobo Shack, and that's where it'll be to stay.
There it is. And I think with that...
There's only one thing left to say.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks.